Hey everyone, it's David Chen, here today with Devendra Hardwar. Devendra, thanks for chatting with me and being here today.
Happy to be here. I mean, this is going to be a chat, though. It's worth having.
Yeah. Well, this isn't going to be a normal episode. We're here because we wanted to take a moment to talk about someone who's a foundational part of this podcast's history, our original co-host, Adam Quigley. Many of you have been listening since the beginning know that Adam's passion for movies and his singular voice helped to define our show in the early years of the podcast. Adam had been navigating some very challenging medical issues over the course of the past year, and I'm very saddened to share news that he recently passed away. I wanted to use this episode as an opportunity for Devendra and I to share our memories of Adam, and also to share some memorable clips of the podcast when it was just the three of us, Devendra, Adam, and myself. I'm going to be reading a little bit from some notes just because I wanted to make sure I was well prepared for this conversation. But I also just, you know, in case I sound a little bit different, that's why. But before we begin, I wanted to tell the story of how Adam came to work with Devendra and myself. If you'll recall, Devendra, I was in my 20s. We all were. And I was kind of exploring who I wanted to be as a person on the internet, using the internet all the time, exploring the idea of podcasts, which at the time you had to download onto an iPod that had a click wheel on it, and exploring what online commentary on movies would look like through websites like Ain't It Cool News and Chud.com. And Devendra and I, who have known each other since college, would message each other on AOL Instant Messenger, AIM, talking about the latest movie news and trailers all the time.
Yeah, I have years of our backlog saved somewhere, actually, because we were using, you know, things that would record all of our chats. There's so much history there. Yeah.
And one day while using the internet, I found the writing of someone named Adam Quigley, looking on dig.com or edit.com, I don't even remember. And I saw this guy's, he was writing an article or it was a movie review or something like that. And I immediately felt like he had an original voice that had something to add to the online discourse. So I reached out to him and we started IMing back and forth, and we eventually started talking over Skype about some of his articles. And you know, I would just DM him about some articles, and then I'd say, hey, do you want to chat about it? And we would Skype and talk about it. We'd talk for hours. And I still remember asking him, hey, I think people might be interested in hearing our conversations if we recorded them.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Now, at the time, like, that wasn't a super common thing to do. Now everyone has a podcast, but like back then it was very strange. It was atypical, right?
Was it 2007 or 2008?
Yeah, when it was, we like first 2006 started. 2007 time period, I think, probably.
And you know, podcasts were around. This Week in Tech was around. The video games, you know, websites had podcasts, but it was a very small thing. It was a very small platform,
very niche. At the time. The podcast started with me, Devendra, and Adam, and we eventually did the show together for about 4 to 5 years before Adam left the show, and then eventually transitioned to the current setup with me, Devendra, and Jeff that we have today. And thus, the Watchers podcast was born, which is what the show was called originally. And for dozens and dozens of episodes, Adam, Devendra, and I recorded each week, and over time, we found a very small audience. I recorded episodes over Skype using my Sound Blaster. We broadcast it live on Ustream TV, which is a website that no longer exists anymore. And one day, a guy named Peter Serretta listened to a live broadcast of Adam, Devendra, and I, and he really enjoyed it. And he offered to make us part of a website called SlashFilm.com. We became the Slash Filmcast, and eventually the Filmcast. The rest is history. I want to be super upfront and say that over the years, Adam and I have lost touch. When I learned about this recent news, it was through a friend and a listener named Nizar, who put me in touch with Adam's family. And I've tried to do what I can to honor their wishes, including making this podcast episode. A lot of people have said they're curious about what exactly went down between the three of us, and there's really not much to report. Over time, the podcast just became not a good fit for Adam, and we mutually agreed to part ways. It was amicable. And when I last interacted with Adam, I think we both felt like it all ended up for the best. You know, I don't think Adam was super interested in being a public figure, as far as I could tell. And obviously, this podcast requires that to a large degree.
And things were getting bigger, right? Like soon after we joined Slash Film, we were at Comic-Con. That was a whirlwind kind of time for all of us. So yeah,
yeah, it was a time of great excitement, and Adam was there for a lot of it. And some of my fondest memories of being a podcaster and being an online geek are with Adam. But yeah, you have to remember, Adam is just someone from the internet who I just randomly started DMing one day. Like, I never knew him from any context other than reading some of his articles and messaging him on AOL Instant Messenger. You know, it wasn't like we grew up together or anything like that. So it would make sense that his priorities and what he wanted to do would change over time. Like, it wouldn't make sense that we would be like super aligned
for sure
a massive period of time.
I mean, but our lives were also very different too, right? There's a big age gap between all of us. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And it was amazing. We'll talk about it momentarily, but like, it was amazing that he agreed to do it at all. I want to acknowledge that Adam was a key part of the early years of the podcast. He helped to shape this podcast sensibilities. He helped to solidify the idea of three people coming at things from three different perspectives and hearing the interplay of that and that being interesting. And he was game for all kinds of wacky stuff that we tried in the early days of podcasting that many people would not have been game for. And for all that, I am enormously grateful. So that is really what how I wanted to start this conversation, to share with people, answer some questions about kind of what the history has been, but mostly just to say that he's gone and I really miss him and I wish we'd been able to be more a part of each other's lives as time has gone on, but I'm very, very grateful for all of his contributions to the podcast. Devendra, I mean, what are some of your memories of Adam and our time working together?
It was, I mean, it was just a wild ride too, because you got to put this all in context. There were no comedians or celebrities doing major podcasts. It was such a underground thing. So the fact that
very few of them. Yeah. It was a very rare thing. Yeah.
Yeah. This was before Marc Maron, even I believe, like when did he start everything? But it was this crazy thing that we all went on, and Adam was always game for it. I have a lot of fond memories of the reviews we did at the time too. And we didn't always agree with everything, and that was what made it fun. That's what made it interesting. He was always a good sparring partner when it came to like having those reviews. And we did some crazy things. Like, we're not live streaming now when we record our show, but we used to. And that was a wild thing to do at the time.
We'd have like random people show up in the live stream. Sometimes like directors would show up in the live stream and things like that. And
they were just floating around the internet, and like we could like capture this attention. And that was just a wild thing to be a part of. That's how Peter Serretta found us. Certainly, I don't know how we stumbled into Ryan Johnson or something, but like we had those banjo chats with Ryan Johnson back in the day as well. Just so many of these tremendous experiences. And I do distinctly remember that first time we went to Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con. That was 2009. Literally a week before that, I moved to New York with the idea that, oh, I'm going to not be an IT guy. I'm going to move to New York and write about technology, become a technology journalist full time. Being part of Slash Film and doing the Filmcast was a part of that. That whole time is just wild. I've told people several stories of this. I would just be walking down the street and people would be like, hey, you're from the Filmcast. How do you know that? I'm in New York, a city with millions of people. And yet that we had this presence among folks. So that was all because of the dynamic we all had. Our time at Comic-Con, we did several Comic-Cons together. That was also a ton of fun.
I remember the first time we showed up and you had to camp out to get into Hall H. It was very controversial at the time because they were doing a Twilight panel and a lot of nerds were getting real upset that Twilight was there, and
the wrong kind of nerds.
People would literally
be
camping out for days just to get into the Hall H panel with Twilight. And I remember us all just kind of sticking together, moving as a unit, and trying to make our way into this world that we had always admired from afar, but never experienced up close. Nor were we ever really meaningful participants in until that point. And it was a thrilling and heady time. And I think the idea that the internet and this podcast could bring together you, me, and Adam was like a manifestation of what the promise of the internet could be.
That's which the magic of the internet before social media ruined it all.
But these random people who like had never otherwise met, have very little in common with each other than strong opinions about movies, that we could all come together and make something that was meaningful and then come together in real life and have meaningful experiences. It was a very beautiful thing. I think Adam got super, super sunburned at one of those Comic-Cons as well.
Yeah,
because you have to wait outside for hours and hours and hours to get into the line at Hall H.
The kids these days don't even know what we went through, like, to be there at the Hall H announcement of what the MCU would be, you know, of what stuff post Iron Man would be.
I remember we watched like the first, we all watched together like 20 minutes from James Cameron's first Avatar film together.
Yeah.
And that was incredible. That was like an amazing moment, because at the time no one had James Cameron had been working on this thing secretly for many years, and no one had known what it was, and we watched Avatar together like the first 20 minutes that was revealed to the public, and it was like no one had ever I don't think we even understood what we were looking at.
It was definitely a segment, because Avatar Day is when they did the first 20 minutes. Remember, they had had theater screenings for early Avatar stuff. But yeah, we definitely got a lot of glimpses of that and other wild films at the time.
Yeah. I think one of the things that Adam really contributed was the thing is, He contributed, I would say, a really strong passion. I think there are a few people I know that were more passionate than him when arguing a point. And it really helped to kind of build what the dynamic was. It helped to toughen us up a little bit in terms of like figuring out what people would enjoy listening to, right? And there's a certain balance that you need to find when you're arguing passionately. Like, people don't like listening to people screaming at each other, but they like to hear vigorous disagreement that's really eloquent and articulate. In my opinion, that's kind of what people like to hear. And Adam really brought that in a big way, in a way that consistently impressed me and made for some really memorable moments. But yeah, Devinder, before I tee up what the rest of this episode is going to be, I'm curious if you have any other thoughts to share about Adam Quigley.
I mean, it's terribly sad news. The initial thought I had was, man, I really wish we had a chance to just like get back together and do something, review something, just talk to each other again. So I'm very sad we didn't get the opportunity to do that. And I will say, this very episode is probably like our final troll to Adam, because he would have hated all of this. None of this is something, but appreciation of his skill and his talent is not something
he would not have wanted that to be public. And I am aware of that. And I think to a large degree, one of the reasons I'm doing this podcast episode with you is because I want his family, who I've been in touch with, to hear about this, to like hear both Adam's work and to hear our remembrances of Adam, and to hear people's remembrances of Adam, which they may not have had access to. And so I'm going to talk about that momentarily. I do want to say I did reach out to him a while back to try to participate in one of our kind of anniversary podcasts. And I think he was just okay with kind of that phase of his life being over and having moved on to a new phase of his life. And I think I was, you know, like if he was happy with it, I was happy with it too, you know. I guess I do want people to know that I did try to reach out and have him on the show, and things haven't worked out. And I agree with you, Devinder. I really I wish they had. So you're gonna hear a few excerpts from the early years of the podcast. We've taken a look at some of our archives and pulled out some of our most memorable conversations and moments. You'll hear a little bit of division of the segments we'll play a little audio cue to divide the segments. I do want to mention that if you want to share your memories of Adam, there's a few ways to do that. Whatever they are, because they're still evolving, we will link to them in the show notes. So look at the show notes and we'll link to where you can post about your thoughts on Adam, your favorite memories of Adam, your favorite moments from Adam. But I believe they will be on Facebook. There'll be a Facebook memorial. And also there's a website called Muriel.com that, if you don't like Facebook, you can use that instead. I'm not 100% sure though, as we're recording this, whatever it is, it will be in the show notes. So if you want to share your thoughts on Adam, look in the show notes. You can also email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. And I will make sure to pass on anything you send to his family. I want to just close by talking about another person I've podcasted with, named Stephen Tobolowsky, who I made the Tobolowsky Files with. And Stephen tells the story of how I reached out to him and to make a podcast with him, and he said yes. And when he tells the story, he says he remembers something that one of his friends once told him, which is, good things happen when you say yes. Good things happen when you say yes. And when I think of Adam, I think about how he, you know, acknowledged and was receptive to this random request to start a podcast from this random Asian dude on the internet and this other guy, Asian dude's friend on the internet. And he said yes. He said yes, even though it was a really strange, odd request. And as a result, many wonderful things have happened. And people who are listening to the show know about them. If you've experienced them, if you've experienced the community from the podcast or some good times from the podcast, you know about that. And a lot of that is because Adam said yes. And so I want to say thanks to Adam Quigley for saying yes. And Adam, I hope wherever you are, that you have found peace.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast, the official podcast of slashfilm.com. My name is David Chen, and with me are...
Devendra Hardwar.
And Adam Quigley.
So, Adam, if I'm hearing you correctly, I think what you're saying is... don't be bothered if you disagree with our opinion on a film
or anyone's. I don't think it's specific to us. I think people hold way too much stock in how someone else felt about something and they let it affect their own opinion. It's like you have to, I personally feel like everyone should just sort of accept that film is so subjective and everyone brings their own things to every film viewing that you should just view the film the way that you view it and just embrace that experience. Well, David, I actually did want to respond to something else. You're commenting on sort of how they're presenting the marketing of the film, and it's like, oh yeah, the wolf pack is back. Like, you're supposed to be rooting because you love these characters from the first three. I don't have a problem with doing that in the marketing of the film. I have a problem when the entire movie just feels like that marketing campaign transposed into a 90-minute runtime. It's also interesting to me, like, how the film's runtime is, like, identical to the first ones, because that's, like, all the movie is. It's just, like, they just repeat it. It's like, oh, not again! It's just, like, the same formula. It's like, so you're just waiting for it to go through the beats, but then I was sitting there while my audience was just in hysterics, thinking, like, how... Like, you were saying comedy is so subjective, but how do people find the exact same joke just being repeated still funny?
Well, we've talked in the past about how people like familiarity sometimes. You know, familiarity breeds humor sometimes, and there's something reassuring about why do people see a joke in a trailer and then laugh at the exact same joke when they see it in the theater? It's because they recognize it, and there's something about, oh, we're all sharing this experience of all knowing this joke, you know?
Right.
So
there's something kind of saddening to me, though, is like I know I can already see sort of the future for the series where you're going to have a part three and it's going to do gangbusters at the box office. And then they're going to keep wanting to milk it because it's so successful. And then there's going to be like a fourth one. And people are going to be start saying like, oh, man, the Hangover series, it's really gotten so poor. What happened? And just like be shitting on it. And then it's going to start having maybe straight to DVD sequels. And it's people going to be new groups of people having crazy hangovers. And it's just going to get driven to the ground beyond where it's already been. I feel like they already killed it. But apparently people disagree.
New groups of people having hangovers. Yeah, like American Pie style, you mean?
Yeah, the trajectory of this series is always so predictable, and yet people seem to be oblivious to the fact that this has happened so many times before.
We're going to move on to our review of Prometheus. I actually really like the sort of conversation that this movie has sparked. Really like, this is kind of one of those movies that everyone's talking about, and they're talking about it in interesting ways. And I love that, you know. I love it when people are bringing up all these crazy theories and interpretations and reading it all. Movies like this only come around once every, 3 to 6 months that a movie comes
every
around.
I think like maybe once a year.
Yeah, do we get a movie that like sort of sparks the popular imagination and conversation in a way that takes the best advantage of what the internet is capable of. And that's like sharing these sort of lengthy, deep interpretations of these films in ways that, you know, that other movies don't spark and that other mediums can't facilitate. So I'm really kind of encouraged by seeing the reaction that film is still relevant, that we can still talk about these deep ideas in interesting ways. And so for that reason alone, I would recommend people go see Prometheus. That being said, not all of us may have enjoyed it or think it's that deep. Adam Quigley, your thoughts on Prometheus?
Oh, my God. I was biting my tongue just like every sentence being said. I want to respond to what you just said, David, like that's encouraging to see people respond this way to a film. I don't think it's encouraging. I don't think it's encouraging because I think the only reason people are responding that way to Prometheus is because it's really fucking pretty. Like, it is a gorgeous movie. I mean, it looked expensive.
You could feel the money on
the money was on the screen. But no, I mean, like, genuinely, like, just the technical virtuosity on display is stunning.
Yeah,
and
stunning,
feels deserving of a better film. And you really you want to love the movie for that reason. The movie starts off and already it's like awe-inspiring, and I was just completely enraptured. And the entire time I was just like, they're setting up all these ideas, and it's like, okay, well, they're just kind of saying them right now, but I was just waiting for them to actually start exploring them in any way, really. But that's all they sort of do, is just openly discuss the ideas. And while they're doing this, they're like laying little bits of the groundwork for these different mysteries, and then you're sort of waiting for those to pay off as well. But then everything just sort of just like just stumbles out there, just one by one. They just devolve into one sort of horror, generic sci-fi cliche after another, and it's just mayhem. It all just feels like it's just like slurring out of Ridley Scott's mouth at that point. And I left the film so incredibly disappointed when those credits started to roll. I was just kind of like, that's it? That's what, like, not just that's what I've been waiting for based on the marketing and the buzz and the hype, but as the movie started, none of that mattered anymore. Like, I was so excited just based on the setup, the first act of the film, and that ultimately you see this just completely inept, stupid expedition by this team of supposed scientists who would just behave like complete idiots. And it just feels like it actually undermines everything it was meant to be setting up. Like, it's supposed to be a semi prequel to the Alien franchise, but ultimately I just think it takes it away from the franchise because it makes it like this was what's responsible for that, and this is so trivial, so insignificant, so inconsequential, and so mindless that I couldn't get anything out of it. And trying to see people, like, listening to people discuss like the themes of the film. The film has themes technically, but they're not like intertwined within the narrative. Like, they don't sufficiently pay off anything that's introduced. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of everything. Basically, everything results in a cop out. It's like, oh, and then monsters happen, and then people get attacked. That's how everything seems to pay off in this film, and it's especially. We can be more specific in spoiler territory, but there's a certain point where I was like, okay, finally, now they're actually going to get to some genuine insight or some actual like one-on-one interaction with what's going on here. And it results in just like, oh, I'm going to fucking kill you. Like, and then it's so disappointing, and it's so expected at a certain point that very disappointing for me. And I want to play off what Devendra was saying about in terms of the character's progression, how they actually evolve. That's the one thing I think Breaking Bad does better than most any other show. Mm-hmm. Because like what TV shows used to be and what they are now, I feel like is evolving, is changing into something kind of interesting, because this is what makes me love TV. Whereas before I wasn't really into it, because it always seemed like TV shows used to have every episode be the same. You would want characters just doing the same stuff, and you would just be basically trying to repeat the same formula as many times as you can, and as many times as you can to keep people watching. Now we have a show like Breaking Bad, and also you see like other shows like The Wire, obvious example, where characters completely change. What has happened to Walt and Jesse with season 2 and now season 3, like, they are not the same people at all. And it's really actually kind of crazy to think back to season 1, like, that's where they started off, and this is where they are now. Like,
right.
The evolution of that, and how naturally it happened, too. It mm-hmm. wasn't just like the writers had to try to sort of force these characters into this situation. It just evolved in a really organic, interesting way. I think that's just a proof of how amazing the writing has been up until this point. And it's just so interesting to think that like anything is possible. Like, even the end of season 3, when I was watching the season finale, I still actually had no idea what the writers were willing to do with the characters. Like, how far were they willing to go? And that's a great feeling, not knowing what can actually happen. Because most of the time you have a TV show, it's like, okay, well, I know they can't kill this character. I know this, they can't kill this character. But with Breaking Bad, it seems like there are no limits.
Well, Adam Quigley, your thoughts on Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope?
I definitely think it is a very masturbatory exercise. That being said, I'm kind of glad that's a masturbatory exercise in not just being an advertisement for Comic-Con, but for geek culture. Yeah. And yes, you totally do have to be a geek, I think, to actually get anything out of this film. But it's more commemorating what Comic-Con used to be and what that sort of signifies to geeks and why they need this. And actually reading a review by Mick LaSalle today from the San Francisco Chronicle, I thought kind of embodied why Comic-Con needs to exist for people. I'm going to quote him here. To my eyes, the whole thing looks sad, like something people might cling to in the absence of religion, or a kind of religion in itself, minus dogma or salvation, but with lots of people standing around dressed like total goofballs. Clearly, there is a human longing being expressed here that daily life is not addressing. The movie doesn't address it either. And that's like half his review of this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, I don't know, like, clearly this is a type of person that you geeks are, you're used to have to deal with on a regular basis. And I feel like this movie, this documentary, is kind of celebrating this place where you can actually be accepted. And I like that. I like sort of the idea behind it. I totally agree it is masturbatory. But it's enjoyable. I like that it gives you sort of a glimpse at the different aspects of people who do find a lot of meaning in it. I really like Devendra was mentioning, the two artists. I thought that was interesting. I thought the costume designer was really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I liked following the different stories of these people. Yes, it could have been deeper than it is, but it's Morgan Spurlock. I think at this point you know that insight isn't really what he does best. He entertains.
Perhaps I'm not the intended audience for a Comic-Con, and that's fine. But my question then would be, who is? I certainly understand feelings of alienation and the thrill of finding a place where people could accept you as you are, but that doesn't really seem like what this is about. What this is about is shoving endless promotional materials for uninspired and or unnecessary nonsense into increasingly large branded gift bags. If you'd like to know how it feels to be at Comic-Con, it feels like you are a door, and people won't stop shoving flyers under you. A door saddled with oversized garbage bags.
I want to add one last thing, which is that we're probably saying exactly the opposite of what people want to hear. Because I think for a lot of people, going to Comic-Con is sort of like a dream. Like, that's like the awesome vacation that they want to do but can't, because they can't afford it or they can't get time off or whatever.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think it's just it's partially because it has become so overpopulated now every year, like, that it's no longer – Comic-Con kind of sucks. The actual convention itself kind of sucks. You have to – like, dealing with the lines – for panels you can't get into, and then actually on the show floor as well, you're just basically like being herded like cattle through these endless crowds, and it's just basically just sort of quiet shuffling, like trying to get through just to see these big billboards that are advertising other movies. And it's like, yeah, what do you gain from that?
Yeah.
A lot of the cool stuff actually from Comic-Con this year was stuff that outside of the convention. And a few of those things I didn't even get to experience, but just sort of seeing it around actually was kind of already more fun. Like, for example, they had the machete truck with the cast, and I think Robert Rodriguez was also there, like, handing out tacos to people. And Jackass 3D, they had a trailer where they were showing 8 minutes of 3D footage, and they were giving you, like, popcorn and stuff. There's a lot of really sort of nice stuff that was mostly fun because I didn't feel like I was being shifted through like a friggin' pig about to be slaughtered.
Let me ask you guys, we got to wrap up pretty soon. Any other closing thoughts that you have to share about San Diego Comic-Con 2010?
You specifically took away Scott Pilgrim from the equation.
No, well, I mean, feel free. I know that was a highlight for you guys, so feel free.
That was the highlight for me.
Okay, go, Adam. Yeah. Go. Go.
Well, the entire experience. I mean, we talked a little bit about it in the video blog we did, our video review, quote unquote. But that entire thing was awesome. We were pretty much the world premiere, weren't we? Like, that was the first time.
It was the actual quote unquote world premiere was the real premiere was in Hollywood.
Right. I mean, the real premiere wasn't, but we were the first time an audience.
Yeah.
The first time a legit audience had seen the finished cut of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And even some of the cast. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The cast was there. Edgar Wright was there. The entire experience was awesome. And it was even weird for me. I just want to go on a tangent here, tell a story, because this for me was the most surreal thing about Comic-Con. But like the movie was about to start where like it was supposed to start, and we were up on this like balcony area where the other press people were, and like pretty much no one had taken their seats, and I was just wondering what the hell was going on. And suddenly, so I go off to go to the bathroom, and I go on this hall, and the entire place is packed. It's like, well, no fucking wonder the movie hasn't started yet, no one's even sitting down. And so I'm trying to like just move through this crowd, which is a very familiar experience if you've been to Comic-Con. And at that point, I'm already getting frustrated because I need to urinate, and no one's getting the hell out of the way. And this one guy is just completely blocking the path of the hallway, and I start to tap him on the shoulder, and he doesn't acknowledge me. And I tap him again, and then finally I'm just like sort of essentially just like shoving him. And he turns around, and he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, man." And I notice it's freaking Kieran Culkin. And already I'm just like, instantly I just have this like immediate like, "Oh shit" moment. It's like I essentially just pushed Kieran.
You're Culkin. Like, "I loved you in Home Alone," right? Anyway, sorry, continue.
So then as he moves out of the way, I notice as I'm walking down this tiny little path to get to the bathroom, the entire cast is just lined up right there. And as I'm moving through, essentially all of them have to stop their conversation and get out of the way so I can move through. And just one by one, I'm like noticing like, oh, there's Mary Elizabeth Winstead. She's incredibly hot. And now she's looking at me. And oh, there's Jason Schwartzman. And he's got a pretty weird mustache. Look at him. Oh. And that's why I just basically, my brain has stopped functioning. And I get to the bathroom door and I'm just trying to open it. And then someone in there, he walks out. I try to walk in. And he's like, Oh, I think there's people waiting for you right here. So a second guy goes in, and then I'm standing by the door behind this other guy, and it's Brian Lee O'Malley, the author of Scott Pilgrim. And I just, like, processing through my head, like, I just cut in front of line to use the bathroom in front of Brian Lee O'Malley. And then we ended up talking a little bit, and that was also incredibly awkward, because I couldn't get out of my head that I just cut in front of Brian Lee O'Malley. And I went back to my seat, and I was just like, oh, okay, that was the most strange experience of my life. And then I find out after the show that when Metric, this awesome band, they come on stage to play a set for the film, they were sitting right beside me throughout the film. And I remember thinking, like, oh, who are these assholes that are coming in 5 minutes after the film starts and people are delivering them pizza and then leaving before the film ends? And then I immediately realized why. So, yeah, that entire experience was both amazing and just utterly surreal.
Adam Quigley, your thoughts on Chronicle?
Guys, I love this movie. I love it so much. Yeah, you're talking about Akira. That's like totally what I was thinking about for that like final half hour block.
They pretty much give up even trying not to be Akira at that point.
I mean, they even have them shouting the name repeatedly. It doesn't have quite the same ring to it. Andrew doesn't sound nearly as nice as Tetsuo, but it still evokes Akira in a major way, and in actually a pretty awesome way. And it actually reminded me of another film, a much lesser known film called Zero Day, which is also sort of found footage. And it's inspired by the Columbine Massacre. And it's about like best friends filming themselves, basically plotting and dealing with bullies and stuff before they end up going on a shooting spree. And in some weird ways, it shares striking similarities to Chronicle. It's the only kind of core difference here is that instead of being about like abused kids getting a hold of guns, they get telekinesis. So it's kind of weird. The movie has like these dark undertones and sort of a similar dramatic weight that you get from like a school shooting morality tale, but it also enjoys like all of those benefits that you get with like a great genre film. It's I really like the balance. Like the first half is really fun. It's like good spirited fun. It's got a lot of humor to it. The sense of spectacle, it's all about sort of giving that sense of awe. Like these, you're sort of getting to experience these powers for the first time with these characters. Just the set pieces, and specifically I'm thinking about once they learn what else they can do with telekinesis besides move things, in terms of like their body. I don't know like how much we want to spoil, but yeah, there's some really cool stuff that they do with telekinesis. I find that balance of tones almost more interesting, because like this is, even though that obviously like we've already spoiled like the marketing, not even us spoiled, the marketing has spoiled sort of the character arc of one of the friends, but the premise itself is not something that like that promises that sort of tragic ending. Even in a movie like Carrie, another telekinesis film, that movie starts off with her getting her period in the shower for the first time, and then the girls around her are mocking her and pelting her with tampons, and you're just like, well, this movie is hardcore fucked up. There's no way the story ends happily. Chronicle is not like that. It actually, it literally is like the exact opposite, because it has that wish fulfillment story of like the friendless bully boy from the broken home that suddenly finds himself with amazing superpowers. And that's a story, like that's the basis of like Harry Potter and Spider-Man. It's the superhero origin story. And we've seen it hundreds of times, and it's just here they set it in the real world. They basically, that's what the kind of the point of the found footage angle is, that it's supposed to be the, like the real life equivalent of that, which shows us it's like you don't become the superhero, you become the villain. I think it's really cool the way that it flips that on its head. And also I find it interesting how it distinguishes itself from sort of the other sort of superhero films recently that also try to take that sort of the reality based angle, like Kick-Ass and Super and Special. Those films tried to take on the superhero genre without powers. That's sort of like the core difference. And then it's kind of interesting to see that dynamic between you have all the characters in Kick-Ass being these people that want to be heroes. They want to like help people even though they don't have any powers. They want to be like the arbiters of justice and they want to fight crime. And then in Chronicles, more like Misfits, where it's like you're giving these characters these amazing powers that just abuse them outright or don't actually even really consider being genuine superheroes. And they actually, in the film, they don't even discuss it. It's not even mentioned. It's like, what do you want to do with these powers?
They
like,
don't
I
even
don't
try to do that either.
Yeah, it's like they just use them for fun and for sort of selfish reasons. And then, like, and it's sort of like that standard tale about power. It's like eventually it gets abused and people get hurt and then everything ends badly. But I just think that's like a really cool contrast between you have people trying to combat evil despite not having the ability to do so, and they're like crazy. These like people are insane, and then you have these powerful people. They actually do have the ability to help people, but they're only interested in helping themselves, and they're actually a lot more believable and grounded and true to life. Kind of a weird dichotomy.
I think it's
interesting to have that sort of balance of genres within the reality-based superhero films.
Right.
And I'm
like,
glad
even though these kids have superpowers, they're still teenagers with superpowers. Like, that's
right.
It focuses on a certain reality of being a teenager that I think is pretty, you know, true to life.
And pretty unique for this genre.
I think that our discussion here mirrors the discussion in the larger film critic community as a whole, where a lot of people, probably more people hated it, actually. So we're a little skewed in that three of us kind of enjoyed it and Adam really hated it. But probably in the real life, if you were comparing all film critics, it would be the other way around. And then maybe if you're comparing regular moviegoers, this is actually probably a good representation. So in any case, it's been a interesting discussion. I think that represents a lot of different viewpoints. And Battle LA is a movie that I honestly can't predict whether you'll like it or not, because I didn't know, you know, I would not have guessed that Adam would have hated it or that Dan Trachtenberg would have loved it. So I have no idea. But I think we've done a pretty good job of explaining what you're in for if you go see the movie. And I think we can leave it at that, guys. Unless any of you
actually can I just give like one final word?
Sure.
I want to quote Shakespeare.
Oh, boy.
That's going to be a first. But I'm going to quote Shakespeare.
Macbeth, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you knew exactly what I'm going to quote to.
Go ahead.
You want to read it for me?
No, please.
I think you can do better.
Go ahead.
Than I can.
Okay, fine. Let me read it and then see if I can guess what. Let me see if I can guess the quote without even knowing. We haven't discussed this before.
We have not discussed this, but you know exactly what I'm referring to.
Okay. Okay. Well, life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
Thank you, David. And now a clip from the Pacific Rim trailer. We always thought alien life would come from the stars, but it came from deep beneath the sea, in a portal between dimensions in the Pacific Ocean. Something out there had discovered us. They counted on the humans to hide, to give up, to fail. They never considered our ability to stand, to endure, to rise to the challenge. Ready to activate the Jaeger in 3, 2, 1. Today, at the end of our hope, at the end of our tide, we've chosen to believe in each other.
Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse. Pacific.
How many times have you seen this?
I've watched it at least like 10 times.
Hey everyone, David Chen here from Present Day. I just wanted to introduce this last clip we're going to play for you. Pacific Rim is a movie that all three of us were really looking forward to, and we knew Adam was looking forward to it, as evidenced by his performance of the trailer. And so Adam had already left the show by the time the movie came out, but we invited him back to join us for that review. So you're going to hear a couple of clips from that conversation.
Got a few emails about Pacific Rim in advance of us reviewing the film, and I'm going to read one of them right here. Luke from Santa Ana, California writes in, "Hey /Filmcast, I just saw Pacific Rim and freaking loved it, but it makes me sad to think that when you review it, Adam Quigley will not be joining you. This is a movie that was made for Adam, and I would love to hear him on the episode with you guys. Do you think that you might be able to convince him to return as a guest?" Well, today I'm pleased to announce Adam Quigley is back on the podcast for our review of Pacific Rim. Adam, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing all right. Why wouldn't I be here?
Well, Adam, some people have noticed that you have been absent for the last couple of months.
That is comedy.
So, what's up with that?
Oh, well, you guys must be in that other timeline.
I see. We were in the timeline where you were not there. But in your timeline?
That sounds like the darkest timeline in my life.
That was the...
Was Man of Steel good in your timeline? That's all I'm wondering.
In my timeline, I defended the hell out of Man of Steel.
I see. Let's get into this review of Pacific Rim. Adam, this is a movie you've been looking forward to for months and months. You finally saw it. So did it live up to your unrealistic expectations?
Well, they weren't unrealistic because I knew what it was about. And it's Guillermo del Toro, and he delivered exactly what I wanted from it.
I see. And what is that, Adam? What did he deliver?
He understands the basic tenets of like what makes a blockbuster like this good. I've repeatedly said on the podcast, like Jurassic Park's probably my all-time favorite movie, or at least the one I sort of go to if people ask me. And he understands how to deliver the spectacular. He understands wonder. He understands terror. He understands how to combine all of them together. I think like one of the things that I love so much about the film can be summed up within like the first 5 minutes, which is just usually in movies like this, you have like the exposition dump at the beginning of the film where basically a lot of filmmakers just seem like they're trying to rush through it. It's like, oh, here's all the information you need because otherwise the movie just won't make any fucking sense. And Guillermo del Toro takes this opportunity, or also Travis Beecham as the writer, or co-writer, they both wrote the film, to actually set up the world in a way that makes you really interested and invested in what's going on. Like I wanted to actually see more. I was like, I would have been happy if that was 15 minutes long because it gives you this really well-rounded view of everything. It gives you it also takes a cool opportunity. It's like, oh, here's some cool news footage. Here's a lot of like, they even play with like found footage because obviously people would be recording as this shit went down. And then it also gives you this like full extended look at how like pop culture has been affected as well. Like, oh, the Jaeger pilots became like celebrities and stuff like that. So I just really thought like from the onset, the way the movie frames everything already had me engaged, already had me invested. And from there, I think it just sort of handled all of those beats exactly right. Especially just like getting you engaged in the action, which is like the most important thing. Get you emotionally invested with the characters. That's like... I don't know. I feel like the essential rule of like blockbuster filmmaking, and right now it seems like so many filmmakers are only focused on like, oh well, how do I get to the cool moments? And Guillermo del Toro understands that you need to do more than that.
It has been a freaking incredible journey, man. You know, like we've been doing this for 5 years. I remember when we started the show on A Wing and a Prayer 5 years ago. It was like, hey, Devendra, I found this random, 19-year-old guy on the internet.
Let's go buy some Skype headsets and do this.
Let's go buy some Skype headsets and do this podcast. That's literally what it was. I mean, or not literally, but very close to what it was. It takes a lot of faith to join some wacky random Asian dude on some journey like this. But you had that faith, Adam Quigley. And I think the podcast is something that has changed all of our lives. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen so many movies, and it has actually like led to changes in careers in our lives. And like, my life would not be everything I have today. I would not have without the Slash Filmcast, right? And you have been a massive part of that. Like, without you, you know, like, it's likely that there would have been no Slash Filmcast, or it would have been in a different format if that was the case. So your contribution has been immeasurable, and really sad to see you go. But you know, you got to do what you got to do. And from time to time, I'm sure you'll pop up every now and then. I'd be happy to.
And yeah, I really appreciate that. I will say, though, I think like it required a much bigger leap of faith on your part to trust me than the other way around. how misguided your trust may have been.
All right, that's the end of the episode. Thank you for listening. And again, if you want to share your own remembrances of Adam, we'll leave some links in the show notes. Goodbye.